Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change, we still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans, are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode, storyline by storyline, character by character, as we break down the making of your favorite zip code with your host. Charles
Rosen. Did I say
that? Jeez. Harry Mullen.
This foolish thing about the real person. And we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests. And all your questions. Live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh, yeah.
Well, we are back live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. It has been a minute since we've been live. Charles and Larry, it is so good to see both of you. Chuck, you're back in your bunker here. You're back, and it's looking better than ever. How is it going? What happened?
It took 9 months, but we're back in Venice, and We really excited to get back on our deck for the July 4th fireworks display. Of course, what happened was the fireworks in the marina started exactly at 9 o'clock, and by 9:01, the fog blanket had come over. So it was. So we looked to the east because from our deck we can see about 13 different fireworks displays.
That's incredible.
And, All good, and happy to see both of you. Although when I take the dogs to the beach, you may hear the dogs a little bit in the background here.
Okay, we are all dog friendly here. It's a dog friendly show.
And we will go to Larry's beach right there. Afterwards. I mean, clearly, I like seeing some of the dogs there and some of the other people. But as Mullins, it's July.
I know.
We're back
just at the end of July, July 30th. We are back.
Right. So, Larry, why don't you tell us where you are in the world now? I don't know if you were where you were when you were there. Yes, the last episode you were still there. But
here. I've been here on Martha's Vineyard in the town of Vineyard Haven since middle of April, late, like 25th of April actually, and we'll be here till we'll be back on West Coast July 30th. Yeah. With any luck,
you did get to see some friends. You went down to New York, right?
So New York for three nights. Had my flight canceled on the way home. Nice. Took a 9-hour bus ride instead. Thank you very much. Instead of a 30-minute airplane, but yeah, it was part of the meltdown. But it was fine. What are you gonna do? New York was great. I have to tell you, Shucked is so hilarious. The musical Shucked. It's kind of like the Book of Mormon experience. It's right. The audience is going crazy, and it just goes on and on and on. Very good.
That sounds
really amazing.
Yeah, and Leopold Stott, I was a little bit underwhelmed by, oddly. It's so minimalistic too. There's no stagecraft in it at all. It's just kind of like they have projections.
Well,
I have projections in a corner show at Pinter Theater.
Pinter. There's no Pinter. Staging in Pinter.
Tom Stavers.
But it's
a Broadway show. Okay, guys. I come to be really overwhelmed, and I want to see stagecraft, and I want to see stuff going on.
Speaking of stagecraft, you ran into a celebrity.
Yeah. Okay. What's that, Chuck? What's going on?
I was saying, if you want to be overwhelmed by stagecraft, start with the one that goes, ah, yabanga, da 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 da.
That's why it's for so long.
Someone says here, Crystal Diane says that she loves seeing Shucked. It was so entertaining. So there you have.
It's just you love it, and like I said, it's good.
You ran into a celebrity. You ran into a celebrity.
I was meeting a friend to go out in a boat for the afternoon on the Chilmark store porch. And we were sitting on the porch. He was getting a slice of pizza. And this woman who was sitting next to me asked my friend, who she knew, if he would like open this bottle cap of like, bottled water. And he's like, he couldn't do it. So I said, here, let me do it. So I did it. And then she noticed I was wearing the Planet 90210 t-shirt. And she went, oh, my gosh, that show was so important for me. And then her mom said, are you kidding? We watched every episode, and we have life lessons after it. We saw every season. And I realized it was Amy Schumer. Amy Schumer, OG fan of the show. In fact, she said to me, in my new show, I'm using a couple of clips. Someone's going to get a clip feed for the Halloween episode with Kelly in the racy outfit, the near the sexual attack. So she's got that in her new show. It hasn't aired yet. So
I wonder what that show is. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It was Halloween, the second. We talked about
the show
that
she's doing, Amy Schumer.
She has like five shows. You know, not just one show. She has many shows. But anyway, they just couldn't have enough, so I got them. I went to the Beverly Hills 90210 podcast store.
Still available. Store,
and got the some Planet 90210 t-shirts for them. I just delivered them to where they're going to pick them up today. So I was pretty
excited. That's so awesome.
Great to hear that.
Chuck, you were a special guest on the 90210 OMG podcast. They liked you so much, they invited you back for a second round. How was that experience for you?
I liked it. Well, I've got a crush on Jenny, so it's just great to just be in her orbit. I really, every time I've seen her over the years, it's just really, so see her through Zoom is nice too, and all the help she's given to our podcast with some of our creative endeavors and playing characters and all of that. So it was great to see her. And Tori too, especially the first one, she was just getting over an illness. And the second one, it was just great to see her there. And she, it was funny. She had never learned. We started talking about TV bloopers and that her father didn't ever want us to keep the reel for the actors of the outtakes. That he ceded that area to Dick Clark. So we talked about, and she didn't know that. We talked about that a little bit. Also thought it was, she asked me a very interesting question. She wanted to know what I think her father's role would have been in the world of reality television had he been later. And I said, he would have found a way to own it. He would have found a way to be part of it. He would have had his Bachelor or Survivor or something in that world, even if it's the one with the dress designers or the food thing. He would have found a place to use the Beverly Hills and glamour and do that. So that was an interesting that question came.
Sure.
And we didn't talk as much about the music the second time. And I don't think I gave, we kind of glossed over even the 60s episode.
Did you convert them at all to be fans of the 60s episode?
I said pretty early on, I said, people who don't like this episode probably don't like the politics and probably think they would have liked the war. And seriously, I mean, you got that whole group's not going to really love this. One of the things I didn't say on that, which is really something, if anybody's watching here and gets in the mood to go look at that episode again for whatever reason, even without the great soundtrack, is that when we actually did the taking of the building of the chancellor's office, I had footage of what the SDS shot when they took over Columbia University.
I remember.
Jason recreated it. Yeah, and what a phenomenal job of directing. And you look at his acting up and down. This is one of the best performances of the whole series, and quite frankly. He went so far out of himself to be that character of the brother.
Yes.
And, I respectfully disagree. The one thing that they we talked a little bit about was Shannon.
Mm.
We did talk about the her being let go in that period of time and when they were brought into it and when they weren't. And, it was interesting to be part of. And And as I say, I just really enjoy being in their company.
Okay, that's good to know. A couple things that have happened here. People say, okay, so Leona says, as usual, Chuck was great on the other podcast. Love him and always appreciate his insight and honesty. And then Liz said, our friend Liz, hey, Liz, it was just her birthday the other day. I could listen to Chuck all day. And
well, that's because my wife has stopped listening to me any time of the day.
Leona says, me too. So everybody's kind of on the Chuck boat right now.
Good. I appreciate that. I really do. I know I'm not quite as effusive as my buddy Larry about the community and all that, but I really do appreciate that we did it for the fans. That's who Mr. Spelling made the show with, and that we're still talking about this all these years later is just really quite gratifying.
And Nicole Drummond says, having them hate on that episode made me not listen to the podcast as much as I used to, talking about the 60s episode. So
well, you know, I don't think it was the, well, you know, I don't listen, and I don't even when,
I don't,
you know, those of you who know that I used to do the podcast, the other podcast,
the Blaze.
Yes. What is that? And, no, I'm just kidding. Well, it's so out of the loop at this point. I love them.
The thing is that I never listened to them mock the show or talk about the show or this episode or that. You know, that here's what we did, you know, enjoy or you know, and we were conditioned pretty early on to expect that people aren't going to like it anyway. So or they're going to begrudgingly like it, or I don't know, you know.
It was a spelling show.
Yeah, it's too bad, right?
You mentioned Jenny is your crush. My crush, Kathleen Robertson, Claire Arnold's birthday is on Friday. So I wanted to make sure that I took the moment to say happy birthday. Oh, it's happy a big, birthday. Very big birthday for Kathleen this year.
I don't like
the
sound of that. I don't like the sound of that.
Well, it's a big number. She still looks amazing. She gets better with age, right? Isn't that what I think? Okay. So This week, we decided to go off the beaten path a little bit. I don't know which one of you came up with this idea.
Thank you very much.
This is a Larry. This is a Larry.
Also, Larry, you have to make some connection into it. The fact of our brethren and sister, our brothers and sisters walking picket lines.
Yes, there is that topic too. Oh,
yeah,
yes,
I mean, I'm away from the action here on the island, but. I don't know what to say. I feel bad for them out there. I know they're really everyone's keeping up a good front. But I always believe there's a deal to be made. You know, I always believe that. And I guess a lot of it has to do with the actors now. If the actors go out, there could be a quick solution to the strike. I mean, they could get over quick. If the actors don't make a deal, then, you know, the writers have to get real. I mean, what does this really mean? I mean, you know, it always used to be like, what are you going to gain? What are you going to lose? I mean, might lose a whole other generation of writers. So never mind looking for employment or, you know, it's anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. I don't know. How did I get into that, Chuck? Thank you.
Chuck just curved you.
We wanted to acknowledge that there were other people writing.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, I also, you know, there's a play that's done to great amusement of people called Celebrity Autobiography. And two kind of somewhat like dinner theater known actors read like, you know, Stallone's biography and people roar. They just roar. And so I thought, well, you know, our guys have done a bunch of books. Let's just kind of go off of that, you know, and have a little bit of fun. And I have to say, I'm going to say right now, I thought it was a good book. I mean, I thought it was really had a good, solid voice, and it was honest retelling. And, you know, as we get into it, the only thing we're going to talk about is basically what wasn't said in the book.
Here's a bunch of things. We're going to cover some of the notes. We all have passages that we liked. We're going to talk about some things that are not in the book. I brought in an expert he's waiting in the rings. An onset expert that's going to add some thoughts about what had happened and one of the things that she talked about. Chuck, did you want to mention your friend? You mentioned a friend that passed away. You wanted to take a note.
You didn't get any clips together, did you?
No clips, but did you want to mention anything about that? I remember we were talked about that.
Yeah, we, the 90210 world, especially, you know, we lost a friend. I lost someone who was very, very close to me for a lot of years. And even though we didn't see each other as much once he moved to the valley and I moved to the beach, another sweetheart bites the dust. His name was Max Eisenberg. And he, in terms of 90210, created the character of Jonesy in season 5 and wrote the one of my favorite season 5 episodes, which is the one over the Valentine's Day.
I was going to say, you're in that episode, Chuck. You're in that
and I do a cameo there in Spelling that I thought would be something that he'd love and would constantly show in that, but that didn't work out that way. But we did have a good time doing that scene together. And it was one of the really last times I spoke to him.
Excuse me, we're having a meeting here.
That's a big line. It's a big line. Yes, it's a very big line. Important line. Did you have to memorize that? Did you get into?
Yeah, guys. Ooh, I'm not going to follow the fucking script. What am I going to do that for? I would ad lib.
Our friend Teen Drama Horror says, when Jenny's book came out in 2014, I tweeted all the inaccuracies in it. Good luck finding those tweets. Well, okay.
Hopefully Dr. Weiss is going to throw some of these things at us when we talk about it.
Definitely. About this, and so. Then...
She is the dean of Teen Drama
Authority. Oh, yeah.
She's been doing this way longer than me. Oh. So, yeah. Wait, someone said here, this book gives them a lot of stress. I can't find that comment because there's so much inaccuracy in it. So I don't know. Where's a good place to start? I think a good place to Larry,
I have a good place to get Chuck going. I thought.
Anyway. Okay.
It's the chapter early on. I don't have the exact page. It's 29% of the book, but okay. It's called The Rule of Three.
Okay.
Oh, right. So can you?
Should
you
we put some it? Soft music, or are you good?
I would like some soft music. If you could do it.
Why don't we play the 3.9?
Okay. You know how much that costs? We'll have to replace it.
Rule of three. 3.9.
Certainly, knowing how Jenny was feeling during the All We Make show, we could sing. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know.
Anyway, here we go. It's the chapter called The Rule of Three. I don't know why it is, but there is a universal truth that when you put three teenage girls together, some serious shit is going to go down. I have no idea why this is true, but it is. Now, teenage, let's just take one second here, a second, before we go any further. Were they all teenage then? Probably not. Anyway.
No, I think that no one was a teenager.
I don't think so at that point.
Tori Brian was.
Tori and Brian.
Jenny was just 20, and Shannon was probably 21.
Maybe. Okay. So she goes on. At least this was true for the dynamic that played out between me, Shannon, and Tori on the set of Beverly Hills 90210. When we began the show, Shannon was the one with the most acting experience. She came to the show on the heels of reaching teen stardom in the hit movie Heathers. And so she strode onto the set with a level of confidence and intensity that I had never seen in anyone before, let alone a girl my age. To say that she was strong is an understatement. A fellow Aries sister. Hey, Aries. She had some set of horns.
Yes.
She had opinions about a lot of things, including the writing, the wardrobe, you name it. Now, I never heard her talk about the writing ever. Did you, Chuck?
Do bear shit in the woods, I said. Turn up your dial. Also, why would talk about the writing?
Okay.
Well, they don't understand. They're not teenagers. They're not teenagers.
Oh, there you go.
Just a note, Catherine West, Larry, Catherine West says she's already annoyed. Catherine West says she's already annoyed because she keeps claiming to be a teenager, and Jenny was 18 in 1990. Shannon was 19 and she gives the year. So there's already people coming out.
Funny to me. Let me go as a teenager, but not a high school teenager, but a teenager.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Point counterpoint.
They were teenagers.
So Shannon, she's had a horns. She had opinions about a lot of things, including the writing, the wardrobe, you name it.
But Larry, Jenny has class. So when Jenny says a pair of horns or a set of horns,
she means both.
What's talking about? Wasn't there another word that we sometimes use to describe a woman, like say they have a set? It's not horns.
Oh,
like balls.
You're talking about upper body pride?
No, balls.
Balls. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, right. She's definitely saying balls here. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I have a problem with that. But anyway. So
you have a problem with that?
Okay. And she wasn't afraid to share her opinions, even if, wait a second, it meant something. Wait a second. What happened?
Line,
exactly. She wasn't afraid to share them, even if it meant sounding like a complete and utter bitch.
Wow.
She didn't care about that. She just wanted to be heard. For her, it was all about being what she saw as a professional. And she could bring a ferocious kind of energy to the set. And at times, and that could at times come across as being difficult. I didn't understand this then, but I do now. And that's probably why Shannon and I have become so close as we've gotten older. I was fresh off the bus, just tiptoeing into Hollywood after all. And she was seasoned and had already dealt with an absurd amount of pressure and speculation and all the judgments that come with being a strong, confident, independent young lady. I, however, wanted to be not to piss anyone off. I might as well start there. Anyone to jump in here, Chuck? Any thought on
what is your thoughts on all of this about the rule of threes, Chuck, Shannon? And we're going to get into some more specific things that she says about Shannon.
I think the rule of three is not gender exclusive. I think three is an odd number, no matter what it is. And unless you're moving into Jules and Jim, after hour thing, three is an odd number for friendship. So I think that's with girls or guys. and especially young people where you can do that kind of division. So I think that that's what comes to mind.
This is a great chapter. I think, it's a portrayal, and she kind of does go out there and reveal how Shannon was there in a nice way.
Well, also she, yes, that degree of confidence. I mean, one of the things, Shannon early on was dating one of our directors. And
what?
And
which director?
Who? Just drop that in there.
And was dating our director of photography.
Not Bob.
I could write a book like that, guys, but I don't usually say it, and I'm not naming names. But nonetheless, that is a level of confidence. She would
definitely.
The writer and the cinematographer were my peers. Mm. And there was that appeal that I I'm not... That's not gossip. That's just the way it was. And she handled herself fine with all of that. The men got a little nuts. But so the level of experience, when I read Jenny's book here, the parts of the sections I read that were applied to 90210, et cetera. Yes, I mean, she was really off the farm, whether it was, And just, she had that,
right.
that cute punim and very much blondness. And she met Mr. Showbiz. She met a wonderful guy named Randy James, her manager, who took care of her then and now.
Hero of the book. Hero.
Yes. A wonderful human being. Listen, I have to say about Randy James, when we were doing the Super Show way back, when he didn't know me, he knew you guys for sure, but we were doing this, he made sure that Jenny was on that Super Show, and then that really helped open the door for everybody. So he's just a very kind person. He always takes my messages and calls. He's just a good dude.
Well, when we started, we started this out, I never wanted to misrepresent what I could do in terms of guests or this or that. But the one person I knew I could reach out to was Randy James, who had been then in this and felt real comfortable. And still, whenever we talk on the phone, it's very comfortable. And that was her, you know, that really allowed her to become, have a very interesting career. And at this point, living a really nice life. And, you know, with support from still in the business with Randy.
Yes. Yeah, and Larry, you brought up a good point.
I just want to bring up one thing. When you read the book, Randy James is the hero of the book.
Yes.
And the other thing that really occurred to me, and Chuck, you know how hard this is, she remained loyal to him all these years. That's just so never.
She's a very loyal person. And you know who else she remained loyal to?
That says so much about Jenny.
Aaron Spelling, who she remained loyal to. Okay. I mean, one of the things
he would have okay, never mind.
Jay, he basically said to her, "Will you help me launch Melrose?"
Yeah.
And she stepped up to do it.
I know.
So I want to bring up
to do that.
I would like to read a chapter, and I brought my guest here, our buddy Drew, the returning champion.
Drew.
Howdy.
Good.
It's so good to see you. This is about she says that she almost had a fight with Shannon on set. I'm going to read this. Is it okay if I read this little bit? And then, Drew, you can give your thoughts on the tension, maybe.
Can you start the season and the episode?
She doesn't say when this happened, but she says one of the great 90210 legends is that Shannon and I actually came to blows one time. I will tell you that this never happened, although we did come very, very close. If I remember correctly, and I probably don't, which is odd because she has some memory
problems.
Yeah, and I probably don't, given the rocky terrain that is my memory. We were shooting a scene, and Shannon kept grabbing at the hem of my skirt, trying to slap me on the leg, anything to get me to react and break character. Finally, when she pulled up my skirt and my bare ass was exposed for everyone on the set to see, I did snap and I yelled at her something to the effect of, "Come on, bitch. We're taking this outside." I strode off the set and out into the dingy, crappy parking lot. That is an accurate. I think that's accurate.
That's very accurate.
Shannon was right behind me, and behind her were the rest of the cast and a lot of the crew. We were on fire. We were both throwing F-bombs and insults at each other like it was World War III. It was crazy. I mean, really absurd. Before we could kill each other, Luke and Jason divided into the middle of it and pulled us apart, Luke backing away, holding me tight while I clawed and punched at the air in front of me, while Jason pushed Shannon to the other side of the parking lot. Chuck, first of all, Chuck, do you have this? Did this ever cross your desk, this incident?
I think only one time did I ever hear about this, and it was right. I want Drew to do the topping, but I do believe this must have been the time that Paul called me and said there was an incident on the set. It was ugly. It's under control. We don't have to talk about it.
That sounds about right.
He only did that to me twice. This was one of the times. So that might be it, but I wouldn't know, because when I started reading it here, that was the first time I got the thing with the dress, and I remembered stuff about a dress, and I don't know if Diane Kennedy is still recovered from that, but but Drew, my Grateful Dead buddy, was there, Mike, with the question mark?
Were you there, Drew?
You know, no, I probably was not, because I don't remember this specific incident. So I was probably prepping something at a location.
Paul Wagner would have handled this. There's just no doubt. He would have kept it under quiet.
The Paul Wagner response is what makes me go, yeah, it's absolutely true. Every bit of it. That was Paul in a nutshell, because I was thinking, you know, tension is pretty obvious. I mean, think about how many years everybody worked together, right? You get this at like family, you know, Thanksgiving and stuff. All of a sudden, everybody, the family's together, and then two people, they're fine. And then 25 minutes later, they're like, "You just get away from me." And they have an argument and they go to other places. there was always some kind of tension like that because we were around each other so often that it was really easy for somebody to just like, you know, push somebody's buttons, like, you know, Bart Simpson, you know, just push.
Exactly. It wasn't.
That's the hem thing on the skirt, the Al Quinn, you know, thing.
That's right. And when you're at a studio and you want to get away, you have a trailer to get away from the set. Their trailers were on the set. Yeah. And there, or you go to a commissary. If you're in town, you can go to out to lunch and then come back. Yeah. And you were so isolated up there. And they all talk about that. Particularly the women talk about being isolated up there.
Well, you know, it's funny to hear Jenny, because I haven't read the book, so it's funny to hear Jenny talk about, you know, somebody doing that to her, because the thing that just hearing that a minute ago made me think about was when I was the roadie from Color Me Bad. So we started off camera in this little like vestibule where there were phones, and it was me in front and them right behind me. And Jenny was pinching my butt and they were pulling my jacket.
Yeah, I mean,
they were like, you know, poking me in the ear, like, you know, just doing that very same thing, like trying to get me off. Yeah. Off my mark.
A little bit of hazing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So Shannon was being...
They call it ribbing in the WWE.
Well, I was just going to say, so Shannon was ribbing Jenny a little bit.
Yes, and one time, I do remember, one time that it did come to my attention had to do with a really bad argument between Shannon and Jason. But it was the same thing. She was being prankish. And he... had something else on his mind for whatever it was and just erupted in fury at her. Mm. And so she had that ability to push the buttons, you know?
Well, I mean, and honestly, and you were right. I mean, their dressing rooms were not outside of the building. I mean, they were just on the other side of the stage wall in a hallway, because the first year that I was there, which was the second season, the art department was behind their dressing rooms. So, like, we'd have to close the door and put on headphones because they were cranking music and, you know, they were just acting like kids.
And I wondered, did we ever have to tell them to turn down the sound in their dressing rooms?
Time we ever could do that was when we were rolling on the other side of the wall in that swing space.
Oh, yeah,
otherwise, nobody would turn anything off because they just... played the TV going constantly.
Really a soundstage. It was not really a soundstage.
Maybe we know why the boom pole fell so many times, because the audio engineer was in shock from the sound that he heard coming from the dressing rooms, that he lowered the boom pole by accident. That's why it's in so many shots. But speaking of the dressing rooms, Drew just mentioned, Jenny talks about wanting Shannon's corner dressing room. She also talks about, and I'm not going to read all this, but she talks about the call sheet numbers. So I was curious Larry, you had a comment about the call sheet numbers. The call sheet number, the number on the call sheet is very important to actors.
It's your ranking on the show. You know, if you're number one, you're going to get the best dressing room, and likewise all the way down. So as the show goes over seasons, you move up. Like Jenny talks about, I think she started out as three, and she ended up as one.
That's right.
It meant a lot to her. It meant a lot to her, though. I mean,
well, one and two left.
Right. It was by order of elimination.
Exactly. That happens, but you know, you're there. Yeah,
you know,
she
heard. So Jason was one, Shannon was two, Jenny was three.
I think Shannon was one.
You just told me that. I have no record.
I think Shannon was one.
Shannon was one, Jason was two, Jenny was three. That makes sense.
I would say so.
And what's your thoughts on her wanting that?
I think Luke was number seven because he was the last one.
Yeah, he came to the cast late. Yeah.
What is your thoughts on her wanting that dressing room? Do you have a thought on that she wanted Shannon's corner dressing room? And she says, and then she says that Shannon just left and went without saying goodbye, and then she was bumped up. So that's not actually what happened with Shannon, though. Was there a goodbye? Well, I mean, she didn't just go away. There was a whole thing with the cast. The cast had met. We talked about, right? So.
That's not what she's talking about, Pete. I think you need some remedial reading here. What she's talking about is that Brenda Shannon leaves the building she went by, meaning the office or the dressing room was open.
No, she said that she left the show and then Jenny got that dressing room.
Because well, yeah, there was the available dressing room.
The last thing we showed was Mr. Walsh goes to Washington. She finished the shooting for the season. We started up again 2 months later and she got the dressing room.
Yeah, you know the moment. She's kissing
but she
Dylan. I mean, yes. She's kissing Dylan. She says, give me a reason. Come back. And that's when Jenny ran out to the set and said, he'll give you a reason. I'm getting your office.
Bitch.
And that's all it was. Because I don't remember many of the dressing rooms, but I do remember what the word that comes to mind thinking about them, two words, cramped and shitty.
Yeah, I mean,
they were real small. They were all dirty. They were all loaded with stuff. The guys, you know, I was in Brian's. I was in Luke's and Aya's. I don't remember being in Jason's, oddly enough.
Yeah.
But the other ones, they weren't great, Pete. I mean, anybody would want a better dressing room.
This was a dump. This studio was a dump.
That's right. The word. You know, we shot the first 12 without being soundproofed.
Oh,
jeez. We didn't have money for soundproofing. We didn't have money for it.
Melissa wants to know, is it true you get the best parking space if you're number one?
Yes, no, yeah. I got the best parking space.
Oh, well, yeah. No, Mr. Spelling, we get the best parking space. But yeah, as an actor, yes, that's how it worked.
At least our friend Sherry Weiss says, Jenny also repeatedly implies that Shannon left after season 6 in this book.
Well, her heart probably left at 6. You know, she left.
The ghost of Shannon hung around for all 32 episodes.
Look, Jenny is somebody who had acknowledged pretty early on, especially when we started doing our podcast together, guys, that she... And it was something that bothered her a pretty great deal is that she didn't have a lot of great memory about specifics that happened. There's a lot of blocking out. What I so much like about the book and the things I read is that, you know, here's somebody, at least in the 90210 parts, you know, going back and looking at their life and realizing that there was a gap between the image they were living and who they really were.
Mm.
And I know that Paul, Betty, and Grandpa Charlie were all really respectful of that person who was different than the character she was playing. And she was, you asked a question before off camera, Pete, about her being the production's go-to.
Oh, well, I was going to ask you about that. She writes on page 59.
The real production go-to was Gabrielle. Because whenever we would finish early and Paul would come in and say, you know, we're going to finish by 2 today. We can actually start filming a scene here and a scene there. Almost invariably, they were with Gabrielle. Mm-hmm. That she could be someone who could get ready and be that person and on notice. And she was great. So she was production's go-to. But Jenny...
Jenny says on page 59, Jenny became a team member for production. She wasn't going to be the one at the It Club. So do you agree with that assessment that she became a team member for production?
Yeah, she was a production-friendly actress. Yes, she was.
Yeah, I would say so.
I think that's fair.
She was there. And she was a real team player. I know, you know, I mean, I think you may have been there, Larry. I know you went at, we had a beach house in Malibu that summer between seasons 3 and 4, because we realized there was no summer vacation for the Rosen family. Let's go to the beach. We had some time off and I had a party for cast and the different people. And most of the actors did not come. Jenny and Tori came.
Jenny came.
They were loyal to Dan,
who became her first husband.
Yes, we'll get to that. The chat room is firing up, guys. I have to let you know, people are having very strong opinions about the book and some of the things that we're saying. Catherine West says, it's just stuff that a basic editor could fact check, though. Like calling the school Beverly Hills High School, it takes you right out of it. And then we have someone said, and this is a topic that I'm sure you're going to want to dive into, Larry. Jenny didn't remember that Tiffany was with her at the hospital when she went into labor with her oldest daughter, too.
What year was that, Dr. Weiss? Could you help me there? I'm trying to work on a timeline. I'm doing forensic.
I didn't have any of that.
Nicole Drummond says, but if you don't remember, then don't write a fucking book. So that's the harsh comment. I thought that was a little bit harsh.
But you're forgetting one thing. They paid her.
Right, exactly. She says on page 57, Chuck, and you alluded to this a couple of weeks ago when we did the Brenda Leaves episode, that she could have gotten anything she wanted while she was in the makeup chair. She jokes, maybe even a bump of cocaine. What's your thoughts on that, Chuck? Do you think there was, you said a couple weeks ago there was a cocaine problem on the set of 90210?
Yes, that was called a non-union crew. That was working way too many hours in the first, but this is even predates Drew. So this was the period of time of the first six moving into the first, became the first 12. And right when, you know, Paul came on the set, he observed that one of the grips or anything of this was nodding out. Why was there, you know, a lot. And he was a friendly enough guy, that guy. He was a big, big personality. I remember him at. And he was our dealer. But, the thing about cocaine, driving that train, high on
nice,
cocaine.
Nice.
Casey nice Jones, reference. You better watch your speed. Nice, I'm only doing that fans because my friend Drew is right here.
No, but I love that reference.
The fact of the matter is that there was cocaine on our set. Actors use cocaine. I never associated Jenny being one who did or would. Perhaps her first husband, yes, who was in the music world. And you can imply that the music world in LA at that time, that generation was getting high again. It really bothered me, who thought that our generation, the way that I summed it up was that John Belushi died for our sins. And basically, died, cocaine was gone in Hollywood. Gone. And prior to that, you would go to meetings. I never had them, but I did have meetings.
I did.
Well, I had them with these executives. They never trusted me enough to roll out the cocaine. But this was Hollywood, and it was the late 1970s, early 80s. Now we get to the 90s. I'm a married guy. I'm not partying. You know, one of the things about most of these stories here and the personal things, I've said it many times on the podcast, I didn't have a personal relationship with the cast.
Right.
I did in that with, as a someone in the show's above the line world, sure. I got invited to Gabrielle and Charlie's wedding. They ended up becoming lifelong friends. Charlie has been our advisor, and we couldn't, we'd have been bankrupt more than once without him. A somewhat personal relationship, I think, with Jason and Christine when they were a couple living up in Los Feliz. And we go out to dinner with them once or twice, once at their house. And once they lived at a place up in Santa Barbara as well. But, you know, you definitely kept. So I didn't have any idea what social world was going on there. But if I had to give an opinion, Jenny was not a, despite the fact that we made her take diet pills or Cokes or other things,
sure.
She just didn't strike me as a personality to do that, especially as she became a young mother at the same time while you were doing the show, Larry, right? Season six and seven.
So, Larry, do you have a thought about this cocaine?
I assume, you know, look, from the podcast, we've learned that they had, you know, liquor on the set. You know, Joey had his little attaché case. And then Jason's kind of alluded to the fact that he actually was drunk for takes, which I thought was pretty out there. And so, but yeah, you know, the club scene, you know, took energy, extra energy. You don't nod on cocaine. So you're going to be, you know, dancing all night, because that was really the height of the club scene too in the early 90s and stuff. And so they would be doing coke or perhaps meth or some other version of that. I could see that, yeah, but I never saw it.
No, personally. Meth was.
I saw it a lot on other shows. Chuck really has it right on the Belushi thing. It was like night and day.
What about Drew? Drew, do you want to weigh in on that? Was that a problem for the crew at all, being a part of such a big show?
You know, it's interesting because you're right. I wasn't there the first season, and so I think most of this being so onerous was the first season.
Yeah,
and. But like while the first season was going on, I was still working in like, you know, movies of the week and music videos and commercials and those kind of things in North Carolina and features. And back then on this coast, you go out to the prop truck and get a bump if you needed absolutely, to get a little energy to go through the day.
Delivered on the set.
It was just, you just get, it was, you knew where it was on the prop truck if you want it. Now I'm somebody who's like, I watch enough people get fucked up with that and just said, no, forget it. I'm not going to get involved with this. And so I saw enough people doing it, and I could kind of see that going on. And honestly, I don't really remember obvious behavior of that kind while I was there. So I
No, it was really a first.
That might be false honor, stolen honor. That might not be true.
Well,
maybe it sounds absolutely. Cool, I mean, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think it was. It probably wasn't.
Well, Larry.
I'm sure it wasn't as obvious as the first season's effects.
Right.
Exactly. It's the difference. It's the difference between a union crew and a non-union crew.
Mm. Yeah.
Allison Bucci says, hold up. I'm trying to read it. It says, I love the book. I took it with a grain of salt. I find it more interesting learning her origin story, feelings, her point of view versus dates. It should have been fact-checked, but that's what editors are for. So.
Right, yeah. And the one book we weren't going to talk about today, but we will at a future point,
is Jason's.
Is Jason's book, and I'll definitely be talking about fact checking there. And yes. I forgave my bro the moment I read it.
You know, but Larry, Jenny tells a story here on page 62. I think you have a thought about this, that she got tired of looking at herself in the mirror and needed a change, so she cut off all her hair. She says, and that Tori saw it, and she told her that you look matronly. And Jenny admits in the book that she did not look good. She said that she looked like Carol Brady. Do you recall the haircut?
Well, this sounds like season 6 when she had the short hair and when she's coming out from New York as being a model. So I think she's maybe saying that, but she didn't look that way. She looked sensational that season, even with the short hair. So maybe she didn't like it, or because Tori didn't like it, she, you know, didn't get the reinforcement or whatever. But, you know, that was I certainly remember that she was going to get her hair cut there. And, you know, and Jessica, wish she was here, because she would explain the story totally, because she really worked closely with Jenny on that look. But for whatever reason, that's not quite the story. I mean, it looked pretty damn good is what it looked.
Had a story about a sudden haircut or a sudden change that you were going to talk about?
I don't think you're talking about the Shannon one. Shannon in season.
You said you had something about Candy. I thought you had.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's written a note. Tylo. That's in the Hunter Tylo chapter.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's go to the Hunter Tylo chapter then. She says that. Well, it's along the same lines. The sudden thing that Jenny was pregnant, and was fearful about sharing that with Aaron Spelling and the powers that be, because. There was a lawsuit that Aaron Spelling's company was sued because of them firing someone that was pregnant. What are your memories of all of this?
Well, just that exact thing. It went to court. I mean, they had to go defend themselves in the court. It was an unallowed termination or unwarranted termination or whatever they caused it. Tanya Tyler claimed that she was pressured to have an abortion, to abort the baby. And, the Spellings lost in court, and there was a judgment. And for some reason, going up to the office that afternoon, or for whatever reason, I shared the elevator with Candy Spelling, who had just come out of court and was talking to a friend of hers. And this was what she said. I don't understand it. It's like everyone hates us because we lost. It's not like we're Bill Gates or something. And I realized, oh, my God. So they don't feel like they have enough money. They feel so like, you know.
Oh, they're not as wealthy as Bill Gates, right?
Bill Gates, and that used to really kind of bother them. All these young tech
billionaires. Let me just go off on that for a second. You know, I got hired to try to do a series of 2-hour movies about the next family that moved into the Walsh house. And this was in 2000. This was after the show had run already. And I was available and I agreed to do it. And I was so excited and I put something together. I think you may have read it at the time, Larry.
No, I know. I was going to say, you never told me about this.
Jessica.
Maybe I was in Canada doing that show for you.
Jessica, 2000. And Jessica read it. I remember her saying to me, how can you still write this crap? But it was with a whole other, it was as like you were back in 90210. It was the exact same original show in this. And I had things, one person be about into tech. And Aaron wanted no tech.
No tech.
And, no. And get the no computer tech. Out.
And I realized after talking to him after a while that what was at the core of it, and I'm going to say some very praiseworthy things. I want to get back to Hunter Tylo for a second. But that Aaron, I got the sense that he was really jealous of this new found wealth of people who he knew were going to eclipse regular Hollywood multimillionaires. These guys were going to be billionaires. He could barely say the word, you know?
I know.
And that was, so I didn't know that was kind of true what you're saying.
They were so young. They were like, you know, 26, 7 years old.
Yeah.
So the Hunter Tyler thing. Yeah.
That was a very, I just want to say this because we're talking about it and you brought up specific details. Unlike Jenny, who didn't point out that the show was Melrose Place. And she was being hired to be kind of whatever sex bomb they were doing in that season, near the end of its run, the last season, whatever. And she comes back pregnant. And they, and I actually contacted, and Aaron and I weren't, you know, we weren't talking very much at that point, but nonetheless, I actually contacted and say that I will testify on your behalf because I know how he behaved when Gabby was pregnant and what he did. That there is no effing way in the world that he would have told a woman to get an abortion at that point. And there are a lot of social issues that Aaron and I clashed over. That was not, having respect for women and women's bodies was not one of them. And, you know, yeah, maybe they, you know, overreacted to stuff because Aaron, he was becoming an older man. I mean, one of the things that I did talk about with Tori on the show is that here we were able to create another empire for the Spellings with the WB and Charmed and all the other shows that they had, Heaven, the Seventh Heaven and everything else. And what it did is it just put Aaron under so much stress. He couldn't function with all that stress as he got older and older. And believe me, I'm older now than when I first met Aaron, than when Aaron was when I first met him. And you get older and stress hits you harder. So I often feel badly that I opened up a cauldron for him because he just had trouble handling with all of it. But I do feel I could not accept how they were painting the mister, and I actually called him on the phone and told him that, and I was always glad that I did, and that I was happy he took the call.
A bunch of other things here. We have to do this. The jet ski incident with Luke when she falls off the jet ski. Do you recall anything about that, Chuck? She talks, I'm sorry, just for people that don't know the book, she went jet skiing with Luke, and she falls off and gets knocked out unconscious, and then they revive her, and Luke makes a funny joke in the book. Buy the book, and you can read it as well. We're promoting this old book as if it's a brand new book. But
2014.
Yeah, 2014 book. Go ahead, Chuck. What's your memories of this?
we were feeling horrible. From start to finish, because there's a big word that you know, that writers use sometimes, but when you're on the other side of it, the executive producer side, is another word that comes up on occasion, liability, and your star has just been knocked out in the ocean you know, what's that? What this, you know? And you right. can imagine, I mean, we were the company of Duke Vincent. And so, you know, it was, you know, and I, you must remember that day. It was frightening. They were up at Paradise Cove. And the thing that's amazing about it, and why you say she's the production go-to, is that the incredible, incredible minute scene where we play Damn, I Wish You Were I Was Your Lover.
Yes.
And Duke, was that night of that incident.
Oh, wow.
And she came back and we filmed that.
Oh, wow.
That's she went great. To the hospital, got herself released, and came back on the set.
All right. She's a trooper.
Definitely a trooper.
That's Jenny Gard.
Big time. So that's big time.
When,
that's big
when time. You do that, see, you got to understand, if an actor is going to give you that kind of commitment as a producer, what are you going to give back to your actor to support?
Right.
So, you know, a lot of love was put together that day because she did not have to do that. She could have been a real drama queen. That's not who Jenny Garth is or was.
Luke, Drew, do you recall this incident at all? Do you remember hearing about this?
I do remember hearing about it. It doesn't surprise me, her reaction, because, you know, for somebody who was so young to start out with and so, you know, sort of green in the business, she was a consummate professional the whole time. Yeah. You know, the one thing I'm surprised is not in the book. She didn't talk about all the times we had Tech Scout lunches and we had conversations and how, you know, fun it was to hang out with people outside of the building.
Well, she does talk about the being when she gets into being a production person, she talks about how much the crew was like her family. So she doesn't get into the specifics of the things that you talked about with her by any means. But she does speak about the fact that she felt like the crew was her family. And that's why she chose to be team production. One of the things I think, Larry, we were talking about before we came on was it's the things that are not in the book, right? That's sort of the things that she kind of leaves out. In page 57 and 58, she says, the guys got tired of looking at them. She's talking about guest stars. It was 6 years after guest stars started coming on, and she was burnt out at the time, and that's why she feels she came across as a bitch. This is her words, not mine, to some of the guest stars.
You know, it's like Luke always said. I mean, when he would ask talk to the guest stars when they come on, he'd say, how are the bitches treating you?
Right.
Yes. I mean, well, it's just that's how it was. They were, you know, a little bit tired. Like, that's a very honest assessment of it. So I have no problem with that. I think it's honest.
I just think in doing this podcast, we have heard quite a number of stories about her interactions with guest stars, you know, that, I don't know, that don't paint her in the best light. But then there is this thing
somebody,
about
you mean somebody who is introverted and shy and has some emotional problems and is in the glare of stardom and is expected to behave a different way.
Yeah, for me, it's just be forgivable.
You know, in other words, that you can look at that and type somebody as being this you know, not nice person.
Sure.
Or you can read a book like the one that Jenny wrote here, and at least it's those psychological evaluations.
Yes.
And the things of here I am. I mean, you know, the part of that I want to touch upon is and really because I did not have personal relationship with Jenny, the only time that intersected a little bit was, you know, the chapter Running Down the Aisle where she describes her first marriage. And I thought I would, you know, read a passage of
yes,
that
please.
When we get to it. But I don't find that. I mean, I understand I'm not part of being ignored or being treated not as well as, you know, Jay or Luke, you know, make people, you know, were our ambassadors. She wasn't an ambassador. She was a player. She didn't have that role. She didn't take that role.
Well, she says in the book that she was cold to Tiffany when Tiffany first came to set. Is that something that you guys would even be aware of?
Not me. I didn't care about yeah. that.
That's I mean, Paul's you know, I guess Paul would have been there and seen
it. Paul and Benny.
We just were aware of the Brian Austin Green you know, reaction.
Yeah, Brian is where our focus was because we had an right. actor who was unhappy with this choice. So,
but Drew,
Larry yeah. mentioned it earlier, the problem with threes. And so Tiffany made four, really.
Yeah.
And so that gave somebody the ability to pair off and go different ways.
And what about Gabriella? She's not part of this formula at all. That's the other thing that's interesting.
Not mentioned.
No.
She says in the book that there's one person that she doesn't want to talk to anymore, but she doesn't say who that is. Well, but should we assume it's Tiffany? I don't know.
I think we look at it like a forensic, you know, diagnosis of a breakup. And
okay.
You can see what's missing there. So in 2001, I think, and Dr. Weiss, I hope you're listening, I think she got married to Peter Facinelli.
Okay.
2001, also, he's starring in his first TV series.
You're talking about Peter
Fast
now?
Lane. It was called Fast Lane on Fox.
Okay.
His co-star is Tiffany Thiessen. First time she met Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, this is not, there is no mention of this in the book. Right. So if she was married to him, this is the biggest thing in his life, a starring role. Not yes. mentioned, and also the incredible coincidence, how wonderful he's performing with someone she really knows and trusts and shared, you know, many hours with on stage. But there's no mention of that. So it was either not an impactful experience, which is hard to believe, or if it was not a positive experience, or she would have lauded it. And so we have to assume what's left, that this was the root of a lot of problems, where whatever reason was, happened there, that was not, that triangle of Peter, Tiffany, and Jenny didn't gel.
Some comments being thrown around here. Renee says that she's pretty certain the falling out happened around Tiff's wedding. I think she's referring to the one between Jenny and Tiff. Let me know if that's true. Our friend Sherry Weiss says, it's weird she admits to hating her hair season 6 when she did a similar cut in season 8.
Yeah.
Season 8 doesn't even count. They were all on autopilot, just making a show. The music. Pay me here now. Pay me here. They weren't so invested in the show then, guys. I hate to tell you. They weren't.
Melissa says, I actually loved her hair in season 6. I know that's Tori fantastic. Keeps telling Jenny it didn't look good, but that's her opinion. I am with Tori on this one. Sorry, guys. Let's see. I mean, because Jenny was so beautiful. I mean, the long hair in season when she's in that pool, that is the classic Kelly Taylor.
She's younger then. When she's older, more sophisticated, you know, coming out of New York, it was the right choice, I thought. That was really, like I said, Jessica had a lot to do with that look.
Okay, let's see. People are just shouting things here in this. Okay, now Chuck, you wanted to get to a thing that you wanted to read.
Yeah, let's just do that.
Yeah, let's go to that. Is it about the wedding?
Yeah, yes. I said running down the aisle.
I was at the wedding. But anyway,
let's do it. Let's
read it. To Dan. The first one.
No, Pete. To Malcolm.
Dan.
Well, there's Peter. There's multiple husbands. So
why are you asking me? Yes, Dan. Peter was asking me.
Okay.
Get it straight, Pete. Come on.
Peter was 2001.
Go ahead.
Anyway, we're talking about, by the time I met, she said, I've been seeing a guy named Dan for a while. Dan was an aspiring musician. I met him through another musician friend. He was tall, big, and cute, and he reminded me a lot of my dad in some way. And which is going to come back and be important. Once my mom had moved back to Arizona, Dan moved in and I converted the guest house into a fully equipped music studio for him, complete with a sound booth and a very expensive soundboards and all the state-of-the-art recording equipment that we could possibly cram in there. So while I logged my long days on 90210 set in Van Nuys, Dan, a drummer, immersed himself in the music scene. We were two kids playing house, taking my crazy fame ride together. Now I didn't have to walk the red carpet alone. I had someone to hold my hand when things felt overwhelming or my sense of vulnerability would start to open up into panic. Most important, I had someone there when I came home at night. That was incredibly reassuring, and it gave my life the kind of settled vibe that I had been aching for. She goes on to say, Dan was a nice guy with a big heart, and so the people around me accepted him. At least most of them did anyway. Yeah, I don't know if that's the case.
I'm with Chuck on that. The thing she's not saying
about Dan being cute is that Dan looked like he could have been her brother. He had long hair. He had fair skin. He had blue eyes. you could have put them in the twin study that we were talking about with Amy Spies. You know, they looked really similar to that. And it wasn't that he was bad in any way. And I think she's right in that kind of thing. But, you know, like, you got time to come and set and the set while these people are working really hard. There was a kind of like, and do you really belong here? And what are you contributing to it and everything? And I think it's interesting when she talks about, and I'm going to not read this part at this part, but she talks about one of the things that was, she was panicked about during this period of time was not, you know, the fans or the scripts or the same things that maybe were on Shannon's mind. She was worried her father was dying of a heart attack. And in fact, yes, she describes the her father having a heart attack in front of she and Dan at the place. So, you know, that there was happening. And so even though so she goes on to say, even though I was young, I pretty much ran down the aisle with him as soon as I could, marrying him just 2 weeks after my 22nd birthday. Well, Karen was married at 21. So I'm not against young marriage. I just want you to know that. But I am going to go on to say that I can see now that for my reasons of my first marriage weren't very mature. And certainly there were people around me who gently tried to persuade me that maybe this wasn't the best way to go. Luke, for instance, he liked Dan. I mean, there wasn't much not to like, but he just didn't see him as husband material. He didn't come to the wedding, but he did give us a gift, a Mr. Loaf bread maker, and the message wasn't lost on me. I mean, the bread maker was going to be Jenny.
Right. Yes.
And she goes on to say that, you know, her manager, who she could shoot for, is Mr. Showbiz.
Yes.
Randy James.
You know, is said that right before the ceremony started, Aaron Spelling turned to him and said, when they asked if anyone objects, who's going to speak up, you or me? Well, I have to stop there because that's Aaron asked me the exact same question because I was sitting next to Aaron during the ceremony. And because I, in reading the book, recall what my response was. They got him to give me one of those, attaboy, that's really funny. Because what I said to him was, I don't know, I'll flip you for it. You know, it was, that was my right.
I think he used this, he used this line more than once. He used the line more than once, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the same joke.
He knew a good line when he saw it.
Good material. Exactly.
That was good. It is
exactly.
Good material. Yeah.
And by the way, this was an autobiography. This is not a ghostwritten book.
Oh, I don't know, because it says with that's Emily Heckman.
Yeah, that usually means that there's as told to or something like that. Which
okay. Well, Team Drama Horror says it was ghostwritten.
Oh, it was ghost
at written. Connor for because he asked that question. So that question did come up. Yeah.
Well, sorry. Team Drama, you know, Dr. Weiss knows.
I'm going with Team Drama on this one.
Well, she talk about the things that aren't said. When she says, with a $10,000 budget, together, the most beautiful, sweet wedding to which we invited only a handful of our nearest and dearest. And it was at the house of the mother who introduced Dan and Jenny together. And it was a beautiful house on Sierra in Beverly Hills, which is a really wooded street. And I know it's Beverly Hills. It's the Flatlands. It's where I went to school. So she was living. The house was right near, I think on one side was Wolfgang Puck. And on the other same part of the street, although she was long gone by this point, it's where Drew would be interested in. It's where Ella Fitzgerald lived.
Oh,
you know, right there. Her son, Ray Brown, was a couple years older than me. But a really nice guy and was a friend. Anyway, she says here that the person who married us was Marianne Williamson. Yeah. And Marianne Williamson, she calls a writer, but Marianne Williamson, all that point, was a very much of a spiritualist. She's
exactly.
Running for president of the United States. Talk about someone who puts her stuff in herself. But she, I always remember this ceremony because I'd never seen anything like it. She said to Jenny and to Dan, look at me. Just look at me. Forget that anybody else is here. Don't pay attention to what they're feeling. Don't think that. I mean, because that negativity that's described here is overwhelming. And so the last thing is, as Jenny realizes, she says, well, we were happy, Dan and I, at least for the first few months when being newlyweds was so novel and fun. But once the energy and adrenaline of all that wedding planning wore off, and it was just the two of us again, it hit me pretty quickly that I had no business being married. Mm-hmm. What we would do, what were we doing being married? We never saw each other, for God's sakes. I think I was a pretty excellent girlfriend, and the last thing I wanted to do was hurt Dan. But at the end, I knew deep down that we just didn't have enough in common to build a future on. Whether that's ghost-rested, written, or whether that comes as told to, that's where the important revelation is. Not was it this year or that year? Was sure. someone 19 years old? Does that mean they're a teenager or not? You know,
she's 22.
I find this all through the book, that Jenny is willing to reveal herself in different ways, and I admire that, being the, you know, closed out the person that I am.
Yeah, I like it.
I agree. I do love the book. I think it's great. I wanted to ask you guys, Larry, you read it, you liked it. What did you
think? Like I said, I was prepared to like really, you know, rip it up and stuff, but I thought it was really good. I thought it was, you know, the only thing that bothered me was the things that were omitted, but I thought it was really a good book. I recommend it. And again, what I came away was feeling was a great admiration for her, especially because of the loyalty to Mr. Showbiz, Randy James, the hero of the book.
Totally agree with that. Chuck, and your review of the book, it's a good book. You like it.
I did not know what to expect, and I did not expect that kind of emotional depth being revealed.
I agree with you guys. I agree. Echo Larry's comments that I wish that we had gotten some more of the info, the things that were omitted, but maybe it was too hot of a topic at the time, and that's why she left it off. And they certainly have their podcast where they can talk all about that now, 9021 OMG.
And speaking of books, I let Pete in on this little secret. I found all these books, and we're trying to rearrange coming back here. I've got the Beverly Hills 90210 Fantasies.
Oh, I can't wait to read that. Let's read that on air.
I've got the 90210 No Secrets book right here.
Oh, God. We got to read all these.
I've got another one called 90210 Exposed. And I got one here, The Stars of Beverly Hills and Their Life. But the one that Pete really wants to read, I Hate Brenda, Shannon Doherty Exposed.
So I think we should read that book, though. I think we should read some of these books on the show. This is we're now in the book club phase of book the podcast.
Celebrity autobiography. So
what I think would be better is if everybody, as we're going to read Jason's next. Chuck has already cut the chase and has read that, but the audience of the podcast should start reading these books as well. Jason's will be the next one that we dive into for sure. When? I don't know, but it will happen at some point. Yes. Good stuff here, guys. Good seeing you both.
Glad we got the people wound up about it. That's good.
Oh my God! Yeah. Everybody is nonstop talking. It's been great. So
we definitely. Just let me just tell you, if it's going to stay 6 weeks in North Carolina for the women, you know, come back to L.A. anytime, man. Just get all the girls, all the women in North Carolina. They're welcome in Los Angeles.
It's a different existence these days. It really is.
Yeah, I feel for you, buddy.
Yeah.
This has been the Beverly Hills 90210 show, covering Deep Thoughts from a Hollywood Blonde. Chuck, Larry, it is always lovely to see you both. A very debated, hotly debated topic today, and next time it will be Jason's. So super excited for that. It's good seeing everybody here this week. Next time. Bye, Drew.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.